be Denver County? Last time we played Denver, they scored 7 times.
Haven't you guys ever seen these movies? We're just supposed to rally together, believe in ourselves, and we win in the end.
In the movies, they always go out and find a kid who's really good to join the team.
Hey, that's right. We need a ringer.
We need a Canadian.
Unapologetically Canadian, you're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have everybody with us tonight. Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I already know exactly what album I'm going to listen to on the drive home.
There you go. You've been influenced, eh?
Yep.
Tonight's opening song, as you're listening to in the background here, selected by our guest, who we'll meet in a few minutes here in terms of getting everything set up for that. But this is Silverstein, good Canadian rock band, with their song entitled Your Sword Versus My Dagger off their 2005 album, Discovering the Waterfront. For those that don't know, they were a 2006 Juno nominee for Best New Band. They didn't win it, though, unfortunately. Went to Bedouin Sound Clash, but
okay, you know.
I'd say that's a mistake. They're a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
If you're listening, Bedouin Sound Clash, we're just joking. It's all right. I'm going to fade that out, though, because we're going to get to our guest here right away today. We don't want to waste any time because we got a lot to go over with her. She is a fantastic, fantastic person, has done a ton of stuff in her career. So let's get to the fun tonight. Our guest tonight has put together quite a career for herself. There's no denying that she is probably one of the bigger names in terms of making sure that everything sort of goes well, everything's going well for her team. She's an alternate captain for them. But it appears there's no slowing her down either. She's done a ton of stuff and doing a ton of stuff. Well, she certainly has made a name for herself on the ice as a member of the Canadian National Women's Para Hockey Team. That would only be one small piece of her story, as she's won numerous championships in the NCAA in another sport. She's an incredible broadcaster. She has a pile of public speaking, and she's a mom. Perhaps maybe the toughest job that we listed out of all those above.
Definitely.
In knowing all of that, one has to wonder how this national team defender has time to train with all the other stuff she's doing, but we're going to go over all that tonight on The Hockey Show, as we are proud, honored, privileged, and humbled and pleased to welcome Canadian National Women's Para Hockey Team defender and alternate captain Claire Buchanan to the show. Claire, can you hear us? Are you there? Oh, wait. Nope, she's not there. All right, talk amongst yourselves. Jason, you want to talk amongst yourself? We'll get her back here in a second.
I don't know what to talk about.
talk about your book again.
I'm left wordless. I guess to fill time. My book Bounty officially, as of yesterday, was named as a local bestseller here in Winnipeg, which is amazing news. I got the email from McNally, and I want to shout out and thank everybody who has bought the book so far, and it's looking like a great journey so far. We got her?
I'm going to say yes.
Awesome.
If I get in there. Claire, can you hear us now? How about that? Claire, you there? No? Anybody? Are we going to have this fun again where things are...
I'm going to flip the switch the other way.
Oh, maybe Jason. Maybe this is Jason that's... That maybe buttoned it the wrong way. Claire, can you hear us now?
Yes, I
there
can hear
we
you.
Go. All right, okay.
Yeah.
I was gonna say we're it's been a while since
this
we
time
had to,
it was my fault.
I was gonna say we've been a while since we used the phone, but we're good to go here now in terms of getting everything set up and running. So I mean, let's start with the obvious. How are you, Claire? How's everything going out in Toronto for you, where you live?
You know what? It's going fantastic, and I gotta say, like that is a sweet touch to have an intro song. If you want like an insight into my pregame. Yeah. Had a headbanging situation, like that's a taste of it right there.
That's the setup for pregame, Claire, before you go out there and dominate on the ice.
Absolutely, yeah. That's honestly my favorite band. Been a fan since high school, so still gets me going.
I will admit it was also part of my pregame playlist growing up.
There
so
you go, Jay.
I know the feeling. But we want to start the story back at the beginning. So September 13th, 1987 in Brampton, Ontario, where the Buchanan household welcomed a bouncing baby girl. What was life like for young Claire growing up?
You know what? Yes, I was born and have been living with a disability. But I do have to say that a lot of my life, I very much felt like any other kid. My family, my mom, my grandparents, my dad, they were big in finding parasports and like the disabled community very early in my age. So even though I might not have been doing the same things that other kids were doing, I still found kids and a community like that were a similar age to me and that I could kind of play sports like different sports, but I was still able to grow up and be active and be involved in a lot of stuff.
Now, I mean, obviously, again, we'd be ignoring a huge part of the story if we didn't talk about, you know, your disability. But, I mean, for those who don't know, you know, Claire's story, I mean, Claire has spina bifida, which, I mean, affects people in different ways. So, I mean, Jason and I aren't medical doctors, nor do we play them on TV or anything like that. So can you explain a little bit about spina bifida and maybe give people a better idea as to how it affects you and then, you know, maybe a larger sense how it affects maybe others?
Absolutely. So spina bifida is an quote-unquote birth defect or birth injury to the spinal area. And because it affects your spine, individuals that have the disability do have variations of it. So I walk pretty good and I wear leg braces to help me balance and stuff like that. It affected kind of the lower part of my legs. But on the other end of it, there are individuals out there that do use wheelchairs and such to get around because of the disability.
And, you know, I actually didn't know this until looking through the list of questions for this, but you're not just a hockey player. So for those who don't know, Claire is a medalist in two different sports, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. But what I want to know is, growing up, did you just play anything and everything growing up? Was it that kind of situation where you just the boundless energy and you had to get rid of it somehow?
That's exactly it. So I am the middle child of three kids. Okay. And like I led into, my mom had us in all the things. So as a kid, even though I was playing disabled sports, like I was still being able to and have access to all the sports. So I initially started playing para hockey when I was 12, and then that got me interested in wheelchair basketball. And then I did track and field at one point. So there was a point in my childhood and through middle school and a little bit of high school that I was playing all the sports just like every other kid out there.
I mean, is there, and again, I don't know, because I mean, I tried to find as much information and Jason and I sort of went through everything we could in terms of finding information, but is there a sport you couldn't play that you were like, oh man, if only?
You know what, so my life right now has kind of almost intentionally come full circle that I also work in para sports as well. And I work with wheelchair rugby.
Oh, wow.
Ooh.
And wheelchair rugby is very similar to both hockey and wheelchair basketball, is that like it's a contact sport, it's hard hitting, it's fast, but with wheelchair rugby, your level of disability has to be at a certain level. And it's also called quad rugby for that reason, is that you have to have all four limbs affected in some way.
Okay.
So I wouldn't be able to, like, compete and, like be a competitive athlete in wheelchair rugby. But, man, I really want to get in a chair and see what that feels like. It's a cool sport. It started off here in Canada, and when they started it, the wheelchair rugby was originally called murder ball.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So
how intensive a sport it is.
We actually have a question about that sport later in the show here, because again, there was a documentary, an American documentary put out about it that was called Murder Ball.
How am I just finding out about this now?
Oh, we'll talk about it, Jay. Don't worry. We'll talk. Yeah. It's good.
Doing the research for this interview, we found out that it was actually someone in your life that got you into sledge hockey to begin with. So can you give us a little bit of insight into who that person was and where did you play it when you were growing up?
Yeah. So growing up, my mom, having a kid with a disability, she also was she crossed paths when I was in the hospital. She met another mother that just had a daughter with the same disability as me, also in the hospital. So right away, she found her community, and in turn, it poured out into my life that she found the resources and the sports to put me in. So I went out to a hockey practice just to watch it one week, and that's all it took. It took me seeing how fast they could go. You could hit each other. Like, Canadian kid, I grew up watching hockey, right?
Right,
in Brampton, like, big Cassie Campbell fan. And to be able to, like, see it in person and play at the same speed and physicality that all those hockey players that you watch growing up, like, that, there nothing else. I didn't need to know anything else about the sport. Like,
it's
I was in.
The quintessential Canadian story.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't the, you know, the old pond out there, but I mean, you found a pond to play on, which was good. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, clearly the love of hockey never went away. I mean, you're still playing nowadays, which is good, but it sat on the sidelines for a few seasons. You went off to college to play a different sport. So let's do a few rapid fire questions, because you can probably answer these with one word, but it'll clear up a few things as we answer a bunch of questions. So where did you go to school?
University of Alabama.
Do you recall what year?
Roll Tide.
I
was going to say, it had to come out at some point. But what years did you attend Alabama?
I was there in 2009 to 2011.
Okay. What sport did you play?
Wheelchair basketball.
Okay. So before you go on, just to give everybody an idea, wheelchair basketball at University of Alabama started in 2003. So, this, like, she's one of the pioneers of the sport down in Alabama there. So, this is fantastic. Were there other schools who wanted Claire Buchanan on their rosters?
Yes, Illinois. I had a recruiting trip to both Illinois and Alabama.
I mean, we'll ask the obvious question. Why Alabama over Illinois?
I mean, I was fine not seeing snow for a few years.
Good answer. Nothing wrong with
as
that.
As much of a hockey player I am, that's the only thing I enjoy about the winter season.
So, I mean, we got to ask, and this is probably the biggest question coming out of this sort of series of questions, is how does a woman from Brampton get recruited by an NCAA school, a big NCAA school as well, before things like social media and the internet were like an everyday thing? Like, how did you get your name into their, like, their Rolodex for them to go, you know what, we should give her a call?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the parasport world in general is its own, I don't want to say small community, but, like, it's a community, and, like, it's, everyone's kind of connected no matter what sport you play. And then you kind of get into each sport specifically, and there's its own community. So Canada and the U.S., they do a really good job of, at all levels, having tournaments and, like, kind of crossing their leagues and stuff. So I played quite a bit of games and tournaments and stuff in the States during high school and before then. So you get the exposure through that way. And again, like, it's a community. So it's also word of mouth. And
I mean, like, Alabama's a little bit different than Ontario. So we're like, were there any like culture shock moments for you in your rookie season when you got there?
No, I mean, I was expecting a lot of culture shock, but it didn't really happen. Like, being down in the South and not ever visiting there before, you kind of get this pre-made idea of what it's going to be like. And honestly, like, it was one of the best times of my life. The people there are fantastic. The lifestyle, I got to say, the lifestyle compared to living in downtown Toronto, yes, very different. you almost feel like you're on vacation just year-round in Alabama, especially when you're only an hour away from the ocean. So
So it's safe to say that, like, if, you know, things work out correctly, there's going to be a winter home in Tuscaloosa for the Buchanan family in the future.
20 years from now, I'll be a snowbird. Yeah. Maybe.
Never know. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you guys had a pretty good run down there in Alabama, as I understand it. Two-time NCAA National Women's Wheelchair Basketball Champions before you graduated with a degree in journalism, which, I mean, that's just as nice in terms of accolades that you picked up down there. But I think there's a lot of stuff. Again, people can think about whatever they want about, you know, NCAA trips and, you know, traveling and all that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of stuff that I think people don't, especially able-bodied people, Jason and I, as examples, that may not even sort of cross our paths. Were there any sort of those I never thought of that experiences that, you know, able-bodied people may go, man, I have no idea. I have no concept of what that's like.
I mean, it was a cool experience because you see on TV, like, I grew up also watching March Madness and following along with NCAA basketball. And so to come there and have a as similar as experience as we could to how the stand-up game is played, that was refreshing. Like, you truly felt like you were living the student athlete life. Like, you got up, went to 6 a.m. practices, went to class, had tournaments every weekend. Like, it truly felt like you were kind of living that same lifestyle. The biggest difference that I would say between the two experiences would be the amount of funding and just like the knowledge of the common knowledge throughout the colleges that parasports exist at the college level. And that's kind of, especially at the University of Alabama, I was there during that time where that, like, the sport itself and parasport in colleges were starting to get recognized as an option for athletes.
Well, you were saying, I think it was on the Noxie and Cax podcast, that you guys started out with like 6 to 8 teams, wasn't it, that year that you were there?
Yeah, roughly.
Like nationally.
Yeah. So at that time, they were still trying to build the divisions and stuff like that. So we had a bit of crossover games and tournaments with other divisions, but that was all in the name of the sake of growing the sport.
So, I mean, again, just out of pure ignorance, how what are we talking about for growth of the sport then? Are we talking like dozens of teams now?
Yeah, and there's different divisions, and like colleges are now bringing on, like, the University of Alabama, when I was there, that they had pretty much just the wheelchair basketball program, a men's team and a women's team, and now they have a track team, they have a tennis program, they're getting into swimming, and like, it's just blown up over the years. They got a brand new training facility for para athletics and para sports specifically, like the wheelchair athletes that go to Alabama and other schools like that. Now, like, they have their own training facilities just like the other NCAA sports.
Wow, that's fantastic.
That's fantastic. I mean, like, we know that the University of Alabama, they're no slouch when it comes to like funding their sports program. So, and it's great to see that that they're giving the same attention to para sports as they are for the other things. But one of the questions
that was probably the one culture shock that I got from going to Alabama specifically, is that their college teams, that's their pro sports. They don't have an NFL team. They don't have an NBA team.
Right.
The NHL isn't there. So they live and breathe the Alabama, like, college lifestyle.
Okay, so is there
through
like,
and through.
Is there anything in Canada or like Canadian sports that compares to the hype of Alabama football?
Not even close. maybe a Canada USA rivalry, but like I said, like even like everyone follows Alabama there. It's a lifestyle. Instead of saying hello to each other, people are literally coming out of grocery stores saying "Roll Tide" instead of "Hi." Like it's in their blood.
it's part of their own regional dialect.
Yeah, I was gonna say so our idea of what Alabama is like is correct in that respect, where it's literally people saying "Roll Tide."
Yeah, Nick Saban is a god there.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah,
I gotta ask because I'm not saying that para hockey and para basketball are in any way related in terms of how they're played or the sport that they're the way the sport is played. But the contact in wheelchair basketball may make some hockey players blush a little bit. Were there a lot of injuries suffered in the game or damage to your chair, for example, when you played the game?
Oh, absolutely. So one of the things that actually is at any para sports, if the athlete is using a sports chair at a tournament of any sort, one of the things that's almost required now is to have like a welding station and a repair station, because it's, like you said, it's a pretty hard hitting sport and chairs get broken. Yeah. Fingers get crushed. Shoulders get para sports are not nice on the shoulders. So there's a lot of shoulder prehab and rehab, and it's a very physical sport.
So there's like a difference. So the equipment manager, it's just totally normal for them to switch from like fixing people's shoes and like taping things up to turn around and pull out a blowtorch and start like fixing something.
Oh no! It's just separate professionals.
Okay,
yeah.
I was gonna say, don't forget to pack your welding mask.
No, we keep the welding to the welding pros.
Okay, that's fair.
Just on the sidelines, just fixing something.
Just takes it down the tunnel, no big deal. I mean, I'll ask only because I think it's kind of interesting, but you come home after playing at Alabama and you join Team Canada's wheelchair basketball team as well as the Burlington Vipers team in Ontario, club team in Ontario. Where does the hockey dream come from then? Because if you're, that deep into basketball, it seems like it might be tough switching to a new sport. Or not a new sport, but maybe revisiting a sport that you played at one point.
Yeah, so the phrase... It's like riding a bike. No, not at all. Not at all. Maybe in some sense, but no. I came back and I wanted to take one more stab at trying to crack the Paralympic squad for wheelchair basketball, where I had been in the high performance program as kind of a next gen athlete for around 10 years almost. So I came back. I wanted to kind of take one more crack at it. I came close, and then at the same time, my son was born, and then the same, like, once I got back from the U.S., I was playing wheelchair basketball, and I was approached at a wheelchair basketball tournament that from a teammate that was playing wheelchair basketball, but her parents started the women's national team for para hockey.
Oh, wow.
And so she was like, I remember you playing hockey in the past. Like, there's a national team to go for now. So I bought a sled that week, got back on the ice.
Oh, man.
Found out very quickly that you don't pick it up right away.
Yeah.
I trained all that summer, and I made the national team that year, and I've been with the program ever since. And it's honestly like I wake up, and these days I'm verbally saying like I'm either living the dream or I love my job. And I truly believe like I am doing what I'm supposed to be doing right now with hockey.
That's awesome.
And I find this next part of the story pretty incredible. It comes from the Noxine Cax podcast. That you said you started playing and were at the national team tryouts 8 weeks later. Is that true?
Like, you legitimately got that invitation, got your sled, and then 8 weeks later you were at the national team tryouts. Is that right?
Yeah, it was a summer. I took, I took the summer, and I was not good. Like, it was a terrible tryout, but I'll never forget the head coach, like, saying that they invited me back and they wanted to take a chance on me because I was one of the ones that just did not quit. So I had that going for me. I knew that I was going to be able to pick up the skills and stuff and put in the hard work. But
I was going to say, obviously, you made an impression then.
Yeah, all it takes is one person taking a chance on you, right? So it was from that tryout to the following camp. Like, I had a huge leap in my skill, and like that in itself showed that, like, I'm here to work, and hockey's my favorite sport.
I mean, before we get to some of the tougher questions, because I mean, you're talking about, you know, training and, you know, getting better and let's be honest. I mean, we'll talk just about the local scene here. There are not a lot of places to play around here, and if you're lucky to get, you know, 10 minutes of ice time, you're doing well. Like when you say training, like, how hard was it for you to, you know, get on the ice, say, weekly, or get on the ice, say, daily, or get on the ice whenever you could when it comes to, like, improving your skills again?
Yeah, that is definitely a barrier that para hockey faces across the country, is access to ice, kind of like drop-in times. Ontario has done a great job over the last few years implementing more drop-in ice times.
Okay.
Throughout the week, specifically for sledge hockey. So similar to other cities' programs where you have, like, 18-plus shinny or youth stick and puck and stuff like that, there's a lot of cities, especially here in Ontario, that are seeing that they need to add sledge hockey to those programs as well. So getting out to ice rinks throughout the week isn't impossible. But it depends on your situation, because a lot of them are first thing in the morning. So, for example, right now, a lot of athletes who are either working 9 to 5 or in school, which a lot of the athletes are either in high school or college right now, those are the ice times that are hard to get a hold of. Yes.
Yeah, and we
know they exist.
Oh, that's good.
Well, I mean, yeah, the fact that they exist is better than the alternative. So, yeah.
Yeah. And we know from our discussions previously with sledge hockey folks on this show that, you know, the way that the rinks are constructed makes it quite difficult for sledge hockey players, just with, you know, how getting in and out of the benches can be.
Yeah.
You mentioned that there's a lot more ice times being implemented. Are there conversations happening around upgrading or building new facilities when the time comes to build new facilities or upgrades the ones that are there? Is there more of a conversation around building it so it is accessible for sledge hockey as well?
Yes, and that is a very important conversation that all arenas need to be having. But it is something that, as a community and as a sport, again, across the country and globally too, is that arenas are putting in the effort and the time and the money to upgrade their rinks to make them accessible. And it's tournaments like the international ones where they have to make them accessible. So that's kind of a lasting legacy. So it's now, we're at a point now, especially with the women's game, is, okay, we have the arenas available, we have the ice, we have the athletes. What cities want to help put a bid in, host a tournament, you know what I mean, and kind of have that living legacy of our city supports para hockey and our arenas are accessible?
So if you're just tuning in, we're about halfway through with Claire Buchanan, who is a member of the Canadian National Women's Para Hockey team. She's won a pile of stuff, and I'm going to get into sort of some of the harder questions now for you here, Claire. So you can put your thinking cap on if you want, but if any of these, if you can't talk about something, feel free to pass it. Just let us know, because again, there might be stuff going on behind the scenes that we don't know, and we don't want anybody to get in trouble for anything. So obviously that's important. But again, you competed at the first ever IPC Ice Sledge Hockey Women's International Cup in 2014. You won silver medals at the 2016-2018 Women's Para Hockey World Cup. You also won a pair of silver medals at 2022 and 2023 Women's Para Hockey World Challenge. Clearly an elite athlete who is representing her country well by bringing home a pile of hardware. But this is where, especially over the last few years, Jason and I as we've been learning more about the sledge hockey situations, we find it hard to believe that there's been barely any attention given to you guys from Hockey Canada. Are things changing on that front for the National Women's Para Hockey Team?
I mean, as an athlete, again, I don't know exactly what's going on behind closed doors as well. In terms of grassroots and stuff like that, Hockey Canada and us have had a great relationship. They've supported a lot of grassroots triad events and programs and stuff like that. And it is a frustrating relationship as well. We did decide this past fall to kind of move forward and search for our own support, which we have gotten that with both Bauer and Canadian Tire, which has completely turned the situation around for the athletes and staff itself. We are able to just be athletes sometimes now, and that's nice. Not saying that we have a bad relationship with Hockey Canada. We're just, I think right now they're needing to focus on them right now, and we're focusing on us.
Well, I mean, you mentioned they've done a lot of work for grassroots, but is that not just kind of putting up the facade then? Because if they get you in through the door and there's no funding after that, does that not, you're kind of pulling the carpet out from underneath you guys, no?
Yeah, and it's frustrating. I think that the stand-up game has seen a similar relationship with the NHL, is that the NHL has always verbally supported them and said that they want this to happen and there should be a league, but they're actually, the support has only come verbally, really.
Right.
So, again, the stand-up game, those athletes and those staff members and the GMs and everybody went out and searched for other people that are actually wanting to fully buy in. And that's what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
People and companies and individuals and cities and communities that are fully in and not kind of teetering on that, oh, when do we say yes, or when do we kind of check that box and say that we're in.
If you're listening right now, that's a call to action, folks. Let's go. Come on. Let's sponsor these women. Jake, keep going.
Yeah. So I think speaking of the sponsorship piece, you guys went to Green Bay, Wisconsin this year. Plus you have your own camps, all that stuff's on your own dime. You don't get paid to train like other national team athletes do. That's all out of your own pockets as well. But getting to wear the Hockey Canada logo really is an honor. But do you think that, you know, it's high time that honor is a two-way relationship?
Yeah.
And there's a lot more given?
Like they're picking you to represent them, not the other way around. Should that not exist?
Yeah, and absolutely. Like, I agree. It doesn't matter who you're talking about. Mm-hmm. If you're in a relationship and you're looking for kind of a commitment there, it's got to be both ways, absolutely.
I mean, I just find it tough, though, that you guys are paying your own way, that you guys are paying your own for your own training, for your own setup. And again, I understand the economics of it and some of the, well, I don't
yeah,
understand the
so,
reasons behind it, but legitimately showing up at a tournament and wearing a Hockey Canada logo at that point seems like it's a bit of a, and I don't mean to put this on you, because I don't think it's fair for me to speak for you, but to me it would be kind of a slap in the face that, like, you guys didn't do anything for us, so why should I wear your logo?
Yes, and that's why we made that decision to kind of move forward and not fully step away and say we're right. done yeah, yeah. And this is over kind of thing. But yeah. We absolutely we waited around. So the U.S. got picked up from USA Hockey in 2018, and we've been kind of just waiting to see if the other foot would drop with us as well, and that unfortunately didn't happen. And so, yeah, we made our staff and our head coach and the people behind the scenes that we fully trust with this team made that decision to say, no, we deserve to be fully supported. And now we are. Us athletes and staff, our accommodations and everything, our flight and to camps and tournaments are fully funded now. And it's a huge weight off our back, because a lot of our athletes we're easily spending anywhere upwards to 10 grand a season.
And I mean,
to represent Canada.
I mean, like, big kudos for Bauer and Canadian Tire for getting involved. Like, that's a major equipment supplier and one of the biggest, like, I get
Canadian,
not just yeah, one of the
yeah.
biggest Canadian brands
yeah,
coming in and providing funding.
Yep, and they are also one of the supporters of the PWHL. So, like,
yeah,
it's companies like that we want on board that mm-hmm. are fully supportive of growing the women's game. Yeah, they're absolutely. They're bought in.
I mean, you mentioned Team USA a little bit in terms of, you know, how they got picked up and, you know, they're on their way. I don't want to dwell on the negative, but they defeated you twice now in the gold medal final of the World Challenge. But we've seen sort of the U.S. team separate themselves from the rest of the world, both at the Olympic and the World Championship level on the men's side, as well as, you know, within the women's game. In speaking with Billy Bridges, the U.S. team, he told us anyway, had worked with NASCAR on the aerodynamics of sleds. They're getting all sorts of innovation and changes coming through the game in terms of you know, just having opportunities that nobody else seems to have. It seems very obvious to us. Maybe it's not so obvious to everybody else, but it seems very obvious to Jason and us. But the big difference right now seems to be as simple as funding. Is that true?
Yeah, it's resources. So, the U.S. team at all levels with para hockey, both in the development and at the international level, is that they get their buckets custom formed to them, and they have sponsors like that, and yeah, there's a lot more, I guess, science and custom help that they have on their side. But again, what I see the biggest difference is that the opportunity to compete, the U.S. sled hockey schedule,
yeah.
outside of the Paralympic team, so with their rec teams and their city teams and their like state teams, they easily play on average anywhere from 50 to 65 games a season. Like they're almost wow. mimicking an NHL season,
yeah,
whereas here in Canada, that's a fraction of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you play in a league, though. I mean, how many games do you get then in terms of the OSHA?
We at the end of the season, including tournaments and regular season games, maybe 20-25 games.
What? It's like
that's
like one a week, literally, for the whole winter.
Yeah, and a lot of I'm not going to speak for other provinces because I don't know how they go about it. But here in Ontario,
we don't have a league here, so you can speak for us.
Well, here in Ontario, they have gone back and forth on including like the Team Canada guys in certain tournaments and. Because it's a different skill level and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, like, our Paralympic team right now is not on the ice nearly as much as the U.S. team.
Mm-hmm. So we want to get a little bit into that. So if you're just tuning into the hockey show, we're chatting with Claire Buchanan of the Canadian National Women's Para Hockey Team. Obviously, the Paralympics are like a completely different animal. In the countries need to have their own teams. We've seen Team Great Britain emerge, and Team World seems to be getting stronger based on their play this season. So how close is para hockey to having a women's para hockey event at the upcoming Paralympic Games?
If you have it really depends. It really depends if you're a half glass full or half glass empty kind of person. There's a lot of positives that have happened, and the game, the women's game, is moving in a forward trajectory. It's maybe not moving at as fast as we hope, especially as athletes and coaches. Like, everyone wants to get to the games and stuff, and but certain things have to happen to get there. And at the end of the day, we need more women in sleds playing the game, more coaches coaching the game worldwide. And that is happening, and that's why we have tournaments like the World Challenge and a World Championship, hopefully in a couple of years. Like, we need those building blocks to get there. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, we need countries building their women's programs.
I mean, we are glass full kind of guys here on the hockey show, and we're hoping that like 2026 might have been a goal. Are we talking maybe 2030 as early as that in terms of maybe seeing a women's event, depending on, as you said, growth and certainly, you know, better sort of development across the rest of the world?
Yeah, so 2030 is a realistic goal.
Okay.
Right now, again, and that solely depends on more women playing the game over the next few years and those countries putting in the time and effort to develop these women. And it is happening. There is countries that, yeah, you don't see them at tournaments right now, but they are forming, and there's a lot of people putting in a lot of hard work to make this happen one day.
And I want to get a little bit into that. So what countries, based on what you've seen, would you say are closest to having an international-ready team to compete at future events?
So as you said, Great Britain has done a great job of growing their program, and that's huge support. They have a huge support from the Paralympic quote-unquote men's team. They actually, their Paralympic squad, I think right now has three of their women on it. So,
oh wow!
It's no longer men's para hockey anymore.
No, we'll talk about that in a second as well. So
Great Britain has done a great job. Norway has a handful of players, and Europe is doing a great job. They have their own league, and so. I could see it easily spreading and growing into places like France, and we hope that teams like we've heard in the past that Japan is putting in a lot of effort as well, and it's situations like therein that is frustrating, because some also Great Britain experiences this, is that the ice time is there, but it might be at midnight.
Yeah.
You might be on the ice at 1 a.m.
Yeah.
Just to get an hour and a half of practice in. So we're thankful that the women that are playing this game really love this game and are willing to get up and work at in the middle of the night to grow our sport. And it takes a village, that's for sure.
You mentioned, obviously, that Great Britain having, you know, a few women playing on their team right now. It's no secret that the Paralympics does allow female players. We saw Norway's Bree Mjasan Oyen back in Lillehammer in 1994, Norway's Lena Schroeder in Pyeongchang in 2018, and China's Yu Jing in Beijing in 2022 all play for their national teams, which is awesome to see. It seems like, although we're not going to, you know, we're not going to try and jinx anybody, but it seems like maybe Raphael Toussignan may have a shot of playing with Canada, maybe Alana Ma, as they've been invited to camps as well. Obviously, getting these women into the game is important, but do you notice a boost maybe at the grassroots level or on your team in terms of interest when these women are sort of highlighted as doing what they're doing?
Absolutely. So I remember like it's yesterday, both Alana and Raph's rookie years. They were different years, but I remember Raph being 14 and just being on the team. And now 7 years later, she's one of the best players in the world.
Right.
In both men's and women's hockey. So it's athletes like that. And she got on the team and she had, like, she saw another athlete that was at the top of their game as well. And it's that generational, like, spark that you see one person do it. And it's true. Like, if you see it, you can be it, right? And so we now have, right now, our high-performance program right now has a handful of athletes that are 16 and 15 and 14. And the next generation of women's para-hockey players are insanely good, and they're driven, and they're seeing athletes like Raph and Alana constantly being invited to these camps and making these teams that they can be that good or better. And so, imagine what we can do in 2030.
Right. I mean, that's the thing, is that the growth is going to be incredible if everybody keeps sort of following that same trend. But I got to ask you, because the opposite is also true, in that you guys occasionally lose very good players as well. What was your reaction when Christina Pickton decided to move to a different sport? Because she was yes, the captain for a while, and she definitely is one of those impact players that you were talking about.
Yeah, just Christina is a generational talent, no matter what she's playing and what sport she's involved in. She's one of those people that no matter the sport, no matter what she's doing, she's going to work harder than anybody. And that's, again, it's those athletes that spark that interest in other athletes. And it is sad because, yes, we've had a handful of athletes, both Christina, Nandini Sharma is now in para-athletics and about to make her debut in Paris, hopefully, for track and field. So we've lost some athletes to other sports, but the team that we have right now and the next generation, those athletes that we have in the changing room right now are there because of those athletes that have moved on. And it's the young ones that are hoping to be the Christinas one day and hoping to be the Raphs and hoping to be the Alana Maws.
I mean, those trailblazers can't be forgotten. I'm glad that, you know, you have good memories of Christina playing, because, I mean...
Oh, yeah. I wish that she was still playing.
Right,
hockey.
I was going to say. She was
one of my closest friends, and, yeah, I definitely miss her. But, man, I love seeing how well she's doing as well.
Don't worry. When 2030 rolls around, you'll get her back in there.
She might be busy. She's on the cross country skiing team she's on now. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So she might be going. She might be at the Olympics, just in a different sport. Yeah. So,
Our schedules might work out. Yeah.
Yeah. You never know.
So you talked about the next generation. I want to get into that in a little bit. So you guys had 8 rookies at the Women's World Challenge this year, including 14-year-old Haley King. So when speaking to Billy Bridges, he told us that growth seems to happen in pockets like Quebec, Southern Ontario, and Alberta, where funding in local sledge hockey leagues are strong. 8 new players sounds like great growth, but it's you and your teammates who are doing the recruiting mainly for the national team, right?
Yeah, it's honestly, it's fun. The tournaments that we play in, we also go around and we watch other games, and we're trying to see if there's that spark of talent or drive in the next generation. And it takes a village. And when your coach is in Alberta, why not have your athletes in Ontario recruiting as well? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we have the same goal. So, and yeah, it's exciting to have such a young team right now, because it's going to be an exciting next few years for us and the program.
Yeah. And I mean, in knowing that, do you think there could be some better cohesion between the local leagues and organizations with the national program to kind of help foster a little bit more of that growth and that communication? So, you know, I'm not saying like that you don't need to do the recruiting, but like maybe...
I was going to say, there's like, what, 20, 25 of you? I mean, you could have a network of, say, 50 or 100 or 200, right?
Yeah, and that's... So you see the national team, and there's, what, like 20 of us that get selected to for the season.
Yeah.
But we do have a handful of athletes outside of that that are in our high performance program that it's pretty much a next gen of your training, and you're getting all the same resources as the national team athletes, but you haven't cracked the squad yet. But it's they're right alongside us both at camps and in nutrition sessions, mental health building. Like, there's a handful of us outside of the national team that are involved in that growth.
And it must be like a really cool experience to, you know, to be one of these younger players and see the, like, this national team going and playing and watching all these other athletes and playing alongside them, and then to have one of those people come up to them and be like, hey, do you want to?
You're all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. You see their eyes get big when you're like, you're good. Like, you need to be at one of our camps. Absolutely. It's honestly one of the best parts of it.
That's cool.
So it is a lot of fun. Yeah.
Okay, we'll give you a couple easier questions. You made it through sort of the hard part of the interview. I mean, we only got 10 minutes left here, but we'll get a couple easier questions before we get to the end. You're a podcast host on a pretty impressive podcast called The Neutral Zone. So tell us, what is The Neutral Zone, and how did you get started doing that show?
So The Neutral Zone is a show that we cover mostly para sports. We'll interview athletes like myself, high-performance athletes, coaches, broadcasters. But we're also going to cover, like, we also cover mainstream sports. So we'll talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs and what the Blue Jays aren't and aren't doing right now. And
playing baseball is probably
so
high
on
that list.
Yeah. We cover a bit of everything. So the program show started at least six years ago, and just a group of para athletes that were also friends that wanted to talk about sports and share para sports with our communities. And I was lucky enough that the show originally had me on as a guest to talk about women's para hockey, have a similar conversation as to what we're having right now. And then it was a few weeks later that they shot me the idea of coming on and being a co-host. And here we are 3.5 years later, and it's we're currently not recording right now, but we will be up and running hopefully in the near future. And yeah, it's one of the coolest things that I look forward to doing.
That's cool. I mean, it's not the only kind of broadcasting you've done. So apparently you called games for the Canadian National Blind Hockey Tournament. Is that something that Claire Buchanan's going to do again in the future?
So that was with through the podcast. So hope we might be a part of that tournament one day in the future. But who knows? Because that is one of the coolest tournaments that I've ever been able to witness. It was my first time doing a live broadcast, kind of being doing play-by-play or kind of color commentating. So that was fun. And that same weekend, I got to interview Natalie Spooner. And
yeah,
it's just what a weekend, like, incredible weekend. And, like, at Maple Leaf Garden, right? So, like, pretty cool weekend. So I hope that one day I do end up back at that tournament in some capacity, because it's a fantastic thing that happens every year here in Toronto.
And do you think it's harder, calling games or playing the game?
Definitely calling games. Calling games.
It's funny that you say that, though, and I think that, like, again, we see lots of players move into broadcasting, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys have a better sense of what's going on the ice, though. Wouldn't that make it easier?
Yes, of course. But, for example, if someone were to kind of throw me into calling a game that I don't really know much about the two teams, and, well, like, you got to learn everyone's name, and, like, also, it's nothing without a story, right? So you got to know everyone's story, and it's definitely a lot of homework and a lot of kind of quick thinking on your feet. That's for sure.
So we usually end every interview with some softball type questions, which are easy to answer, funny, goofy. You can laugh at them and whatever in terms of our stupidity, but we try to have some fun at the end here. Do you wanna answer a few of these questions?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll start with an easy one for you. Who is Dash?
That is my beautiful 5-year-old son.
And does Dash know that Mom is an exceptional hockey player?
Yes. He loved coming to all my games, and he's not much of a sports kid, and I don't know if he will be, but I know he loves watching me.
Okay. That's good. That's better than...
That's how
than,
it always starts, though.
I was going to say, that's better than him not... You know, whatever. Mom's playing hockey. I don't care.
Yeah.
I got to ask, you're a bit of a TV star as well, because you ended up on an AMI television program called Fashion Diss.
Yes.
Give us a little bit of rundown on, A, how did you land the spot? How did you get into the show? And B, did you enjoy it?
So, I mean, the beauty of social media, someone sent me a post saying, I think you should be on this.
Okay.
I usually say yes to most opportunities. I'm one of those people that say, why not? Let's do it kind of thing. Yeah, it was a ton of fun. It was my first time ever dyeing my hair blonde. So that was a new experience. But yeah, it was a ton of fun. It was another opportunity to kind of shine the light on living with a disability and just getting that representation out there. So, yeah, it was a blast.
Awesome. That's good. I'm glad to hear you enjoyed it.
This next one might be another bit of a deep cut reference, but you were an Uber driver for a while, and you were able to get a guest on the neutral zone after picking up a very specific guest. Which outspoken hockey personality chatted hockey with you that eventually appeared on your show?
Oh, man, one of the greatest humans on the planet. If you were someone who didn't know who Brian Burke was and you just kind of met him face-to-face for the first time, you might not get the full picture of really how great this guy is, because he's this big, tough-looking guy, and all he wants to do is talk about hockey and support hockey, and now he's one of the biggest supporters of the PWHL, and... Yeah, he ended up in my Uber, and we ended up talking both minor hockey and para hockey for the 15 minutes that it took to get to his house. And now I am lucky enough to have interviewed him, talked about his book, and again, crossed paths at the draft for the Women's League.
I mean, you were there too, which is kind of cool. What was that experience like?
That was wild. I mean, it's pretty cool. And also, it sounds cheesy, but, I have to pinch myself sometimes, especially when I'm 5 feet from Billie Jean King. and it's times like that when you're like, how did my life end up this way? And it's, again, another thing that keeps me grounded and grateful and just keeps me motivated to keep on doing what I'm doing, because I really am lucky to be a part of some great circles.
Well, we're just about out of time here, so we're going to sort of let you have the last sort of moment on the soapbox here. Anything you want to say to anybody that's listening, to everybody that's listening right now about the game, about anything that's going on? Is there anything you want to promote or say about what's happening right now?
Yeah, anyone can play sledge hockey, for one. So if there's a friend of yours that has a disability but doesn't really have a community of disabled people around them, you can create a sledge hockey team around that one athlete to make sure that they can be included in hockey. And it's moments like that that is going to help grow the game. And we just need all the support, both here in Canada and worldwide, to keep the conversation going of, we need women playing hockey. We're trying to grow this game. And Canada is doing all that it can to both make the country proud and hopefully get a gold medal one day.
Well, we are proud in terms of having you on, and certainly we're proud of the effort you've put in, because you've brought home some medals and made Canada look good. Claire, in the event that, you know, you've made a pile of fans here tonight, and we assume that you have, how can people find you if they want to follow you?
Yeah, so they can. I'm on Instagram, ClaireBuchanan10. I'm on Twitter, NeutralZoneCB. And Yeah, that's where I share most of my my training, my life, what's going on in my mind, and so yeah, reach out. Yeah, I love connecting with people and kind of growing and having conversations like this. So anyone can shoot me a message and ask about sledge hockey or anything, because I will gladly talk your ear off about it.
Claire, we are happy you talked our ears off tonight, because this has been an awesome chat. We are so happy to have gotten to meet you. Your door will always be open. You come back whenever you want. If you want to come back, we'd be delighted to have you back for sure. I want to thank you a lot for doing this tonight. This was a fantastic chat. I'm really, really excited for it, and turned out to be a good one.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. And you guys should get out and catch one of those Manitoba sledge hockey games. You guys got a young provincial team going, and it's you guys are going to do big things here in the future.
Yeah, we had a few of the guys on, and I've been out to a couple of the games or whatever. We're going to get Jason out there, though. He hasn't tried it yet, so we're gonna bring him out. Speaking of
awesome.
Bringing out people, we're gonna yeah. there's one guy we're going to recruit really quickly.
That's awesome.
In saying that, Claire, thanks again for doing this. We're more than happy to have you back anytime. And by all means, have a great rest of your night, and we'll talk soon for sure.
Yeah, have a good weekend, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
All right.
And that's Claire Buchanan, who is outstanding and certainly has done a wide range of stuff in her career. We're happy to have her on, but we got to get out of here. Skippy coming in for with Free Range Radio coming up right away here on 101.5 UMFM. Jason, anything you want to say before we go?
Well, Claire said it. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Enjoy your long weekend.
Yeah, enjoy the long weekend. We will be back on Thursday next week. Until then, folks, take it easy. 101.5 UMFM. It's been The Hockey Show. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 in Winnipeg.
Game on!
Game on!